John Brown's baby has a cold upon his chest. If the actor hadn't shot me, I might have lived, like Whitman and Melville, for most of my century, the first president, American-born and not from a state that had ever been a colony, the new America, settled ahead of law and reason by those who believed sincerely in the promise, whose design implied the promise, and those who took it for granted or took it for themselves, driven by greed or necessity, to move the West much farther west. Up to the war, I can tell you this. The slave owners wished to extend a colonial system using American law to back it and cover up the sin. Now, if that doesn't sound familiar, then I'm not dead old honest Abe. Getting a law on the books means future debate will be confined to the law alone, and exclude the truth, or dare I say, the moral barb the law is intended to blunt or cover up. And so the law enters the books to serve deceit. You, in later centuries, may like to know how all of this works. I cannot see your time. I'm only permitted to see a few years beyond my own, and the actor cut it short. Curious, too, Whitman and Melville separately described John Brown as a meteor, a metaphor to herald the war, but here the art is also deceiving, for the skies of 1859 and 60 were known for meteoric events. The gleaming shooting stars were real, and all the poet had to do to find the metaphor was read the news or lazily look up in the sky. Another way to think of this is to imagine poetry was simply in the air, as John Brown would be, suspended by a rope. And by the way, the actor was there to see him hang, disguised in the blue of a U.S. uniform, to watch the old man drop and kick. A greater reality, perhaps, than the actor was used to. The same actor who, with his brother, commissioned the bronze statue of Shakespeare in Central Park for all to see, the bard himself, presented by men who played his parts on stage and were regaled as men of great refinement. But I always took refinement lightly, and that left room for comedy, a genre you should know the actor thought was beneath his station and talent, though, after murdering me in the second act of one, he leapt to the stage and broke his leg, a play within the play, which produced, in my final moment of hearing, laughter. The great tragedian reduced to play a rude mechanical who blunders his Latin line, hopping across the interrupted stage to exit. But the war invited comedy. Why, ladies and gentlemen would picnic on a hill above a battle to watch the slaughter and dab their mouths with handkerchiefs. It also welcomed song, at first austere, the strident battle hymn whose truth goes marching on, so soon becoming John Brown's body lies a moldering in the grave, and later the farcical John Brown's baby has a cold upon his chest. The melody was easily adaptable, and the busy photographers lugging their boxes of glass plates to the field, sometimes posing the dead in genuine bathos to show the public what they were missing. Young men, poetically arranged, who moments before had been singing, reciting light verse or prayers under their breath, when the shadow of death directed the art of dying should commence at once, and only the dead were unified.